Hello, welcome once again to Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing the Amazon Prime television series Fallout, based off of the video game series Fallout. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
Oh, I'm okay. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, what's up?
I'm doing okay.
And in the state of Missouri?
Hello, this is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm just fine and actually awake this time.
And our Canadian Alberta, Canada podcaster, who are you?
It's Sean. I hope everyone's doing well.
Indeed. For folks who are curious, today is April 4th.
April 30th.
That's not true.
What?
It's April 30th. Today is April 30th, 2024.
April Fool!
Yeah, no kidding, right? April 30th, 2024, that we're recording this, because sometimes our listeners are curious when we release our episodes, because sometimes they're not released immediately, but this one will be released on May 2nd, so in 2 days from now. Basically, we're recording an episode a week based off of the all episodes that were all dropped at one time by Amazon Prime, I think on the 10th, maybe, of April 2024. And we're doing it once a week, one episode a week, even though people can binge it if they so want to.
It's hard not to. I am maintaining.
Yeah, me too. I haven't watched any except for up to episode 3, because we're talking about episode 3 tonight.
Yeah, same here, because when we did one, you know, Boa Hancock and the One Piece, I was through the whole thing by like episode 3, and it was one of those, did that happen in 4? Did that happen in 5? Did that happen? So I was jumping ahead of us.
Right.
No, and I just don't want to do that now. Except when the next One Piece comes out. I'm going to binge it just because I like that show.
Sure.
Well, I confess, my wife is really into the show. And so we've been kind of binging it kind of when we have a chance. And so I'm up to episode 6 right now. But I rewatched episode 3 finished rewatching it a few minutes ago. So I shouldn't make any confusion as to what was in this episode. And what was
You'll
in
probably
it.
Be more fresh than me.
So, to get the rest of the house cleaning going so we can actually talk about that episode, basically, we're part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, and you can email us. Just put in Fallout in the subject and then whatever you want to talk about, and we will read it on the episode. So next week we would read any emails we get this week. And just put Fallout in the header, because it'll make us much easier to find your email, because it goes into the same inbox as the entire network, which not only includes emails about the other podcast, but we get at least 40 or 50 notices from movie companies and things like that that are trying for us to promote their stuff on our other podcasts. And we'll talk about those other podcasts at the end of this one. But you can find this podcast two places or two feeds, I should say. You can find it a lot of places, but on two feeds. The first feed is Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola Podcast. So just search for that wherever you listen to podcasts, like Apple Podcasts or Spotify and so forth. Or search for Dark Discussions Podcast, that feed, because of this episode will be on that feed. Which is the main feed for the network, which also includes the other podcasts that you hear your co-hosts tonight. We do those other podcasts, and those podcasts are on that feed as well, including the main podcast of the network, which is Dark Discussions Podcast. Sean, besides all the stuff, and of course they can listen to the episode right off the website, but besides that, Sean, on www.darkdiscussions.com, what else can they find on www.darkdiscussions.com?
You can find the link for Patreon, which is a way that people can support their favorite creators or whatever they happen to be creating. What you can do is click on the link, go to a Patreon, and whatever you're able to donate financially each month is appreciated. The reason we ask is just because the podcast itself is released free across all these different platforms, but there's a ton of costs behind the scenes that Bill usually ends up dealing with. So anything you can provide financially is appreciated. For every $5 a month that you're able to donate, you'll actually get to pick a movie that will go into a draw every quarter. If it's chosen, then it will be done as an episode either on the main feed for Dark Discussions or one of the sister podcasts, depending on where it falls, genre-wise, etc. If you don't have the funds to be able to financially support us, even a dollar a month or whatever, understandable, tough financial times, but you can still help us and help the podcast by sharing it on social media, and just keep downloading and listening to us also gives us a chance to keep going. So thank you for whatever type of support you're providing for us and helping us to keep doing this every week.
That's right. And one other free way to help us too, besides sharing the episode on your timeline, is to review us and give us the 4 or 5, the, you know, whatever the best star system is for whatever network. So, like, for example, Apple Podcasts, I think it's up to 5 stars. Give us 5 stars and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And, of course, emailing us is another free way too, because anytime you email us, that is always great to know that you're out there, because we know people are listening, both from the Dark Discussions podcast feed and the Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola podcast feed. And, Mike, you were going to say something.
Yeah, and giving a donation through Patreon would also be a nice way to say happy birthday to Sean Fox. Just give him a little birthday present.
That's right, Sean. Fox just turned 48 Saturday the 27th.
Yep.
There you go.
And a very happy birthday and congratulations to Sean.
Thank you, gents.
Indeed. All right, so let's begin our podcast. This is a spoiler podcast because we're assuming that anybody who listens to this podcast is a fan of the show and just wants to hear the after podcast discussions, which is basically what we do, or after show discussions, I should say, and that's what we do. So basically hear other opinions, reviews, and things of that nature, besides what you saw or have read elsewhere and so forth. Tonight's episode we're talking about is called The Head, directed by Jonathan Nolan, who is the man behind the show. He's the true showrunner. And then Geneva Robertson-Dwarrett and Graham Wagner, they are the writers. And they're the ones that are on the tactical level, the showrunners, Jonathan Nolan and his wife, and one of the creators of the video game are the real showrunners. Anyway, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, episode 3, The Head. So let's get into our review part, our thoughts on the episode. So let's start with you, Kevin.
Yeah, it was I know it's pretty much the same length as all the others, but this one seemed quicker to me. And it's also, we're getting some character background, character development. You know, we see where the, where the uniform first comes from. We'll get into it later, but we see kind of where the first advertisement for the bunkers comes from, and it's good.
I have to interrupt. The proper term is vault.
Where the vaults come from.
Well done. There you go.
And the company that built it and who first advertised for it and all that sort of fun stuff. So we get a little bit of a background on some characters here, and I have to admit the new quote leaders unquote of Vault 33. Is it Vault 33 or Vault 32? 33.
Yep, 33.
Yep.
33. They are blithering idiots. They are, I'm listening to this. It's like I half expected him to do the Ned Flanders, yes, diddly do, It's been crazy. Oh my goodness. And the one guy that probably should be the leader is the one that has, as they called it, lacked enthusiasm.
Well, I'd still vote for any of them at this point.
Well, that's the problem, is there's three of them, and it should be the chubby guy probably should be the leader. Or
no, the leader should be the brother.
Yeah.
He has the right mindset.
He understands what's going on. He sees these people. We'll get into that gosh darn meeting. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
I don't think you're enthusiastic enough, Kevin.
Oh, I might do an Abe spinny on those people. I don't really want to. That scene, I'm sure we'll cover it, but I mean, I'm sure I'm going to have a few comments for it. So yeah, but still, it was like any other. It was a good episode. The show was well put together. You know, I never played any of the game. Like, I'm probably the only one here that never actually played the game, and so I'm walking into this absolutely fresh. And like I said, and I'm still enjoying it.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, as we know, I'm a big fan of the video game series, and especially Fallout 4. And I got some good stuff to talk about that at the end when we discuss related things, but not necessarily about the episode. The main thing I was worried about, if there was anything, was the Maximus story. Because the first two episodes, I was a little worried that story was going to be an issue. But today's episode that we're discussing, the head, that changes everything, and his story's turning out to be really good. I like this episode a whole lot. It's very similar to episode 2, because it definitely has the grindhouse feel versus the first episode, which felt more like grounded in the real world for the world that they were creating. That's fine and dandy, because the series is showed us that episode 2, the tone shifted just a bit, and we are going to get the grindhouse midnight movie drive-in feel as well. The head was a really good episode, and I enjoyed it tremendously, and any issues I was worrying about have been closed, and that was a good thing. Let's go with you, Mike.
So I haven't played Fallout 4, but I have played Fallout 3. And I immediately perked up when the episode opens with Maybe by the Ink Spots, which is one of the songs that would play predominantly over the game Fallout 3. I don't know if it plays in Fallout 4 also.
Is that the one where we meet again?
No.
I
thought it was.
Maybe. Oh, maybe,
we,
yeah, you'll think of it
again. Yeah, so that song was not really played in Fallout 4.
But that immediately took me back to the game. Now, that is a dumb reason to like an episode. I'll be the first to admit that. And
it was also, Mike, it was also used great in Doctor Strangelove, that song. But anyway,
that's a different song.
We Meet Again?
Yeah, that's not the same song as Maybe.
All right, then I'm not sure if it was. I'd have to hear the song, so I'm not quite sure.
So it's just, it is a fun episode. I got a giant monster, a medium sized monster, I guess, in the episode. There's a lot of humor. But it's all anchored. There's a lot coming out of character. There's a lot of satire in this, like you mentioned, the Vault Dwellers. They're certainly building towards something with the flashbacks, with Walton Goggins. And I won't spoil any of that, but, it was just a solid episode once again. And it's just, here's the thing. They're having fun with it, but they're not having fun in a way that's just making it, yeah, using fun as an excuse to do bad or sloppy storytelling. They're addressing and bringing up, and this is going to sound so freaking self-important. They're talking about important concepts or ideas or bringing them up in a way that's not making it self-important and self-serious. And that's just really nice because we have a lot of shows and things that are more than happy to take themselves way too seriously. And this doesn't. So even though they certainly do talk about things that have serious ramifications and have some serious philosophical issues behind them, even if not all the characters are terribly serious characters.
The song, yeah, that is, I played it a little bit. I put myself on mute and played it while you were talking, Mike. Though I did hear everything you said. And yeah, that song is in, on the radio for Diamond City Radio in Fallout 4. And, that basically Diamond City is the name of, the city in Fenway Park. So, very good. All right. So, let's go with you, Barrett.
Yeah, I really liked this episode. It had a monster in it, and the monster was pretty fun. They're doing a good job of maintaining the storyline and the themes while not taking themselves too seriously. The acting is really done well. I was concerned about Maximus, too, and they really are doing a good job with his storyline. I'm really curious where it's going to go, but it was a lot of fun this episode. The consistency between all three episodes is pretty high, and I got nothing but good things to say at this point.
All right, sounds good. And yes, that monster, the Gulper, was introduced in Fallout 4, the downloadable content called Far Harbor, which takes place in Bar Harbor, Maine. So.
Interesting.
That's where they first appeared. The best monster that I was hoping that was coming out of the water was the crab things. I forget what they're called. Crab monster Fallout 4. They're called the Murlocs. The Murlocs, which are made for, they come from horseshoe crabs. That turn
That's interesting.
Yeah.
The Murlocs are a big monster in the World of Warcraft game.
Well, they're not really Murlocs. They're called Myrlurk. I pronounce it wrong. But yeah, the Myrlurks are the biggest monster, the most common monster in Fallout 4, and they're mutated horseshoe crabs, so they're pretty awesome.
That is neat.
Yeah.
They have, I'd also point out, they haven't shown one yet. I'm blanking on the name now.
The
Abomination. They mentioned
by name. Yeah. What they call the T Rex things? What are those T Rex monsters called? Yeah, T Rex. Fallout monster. Let's see what it says. They have shown the bear though. That was pretty cool. The monster you're referring to, and it's so funny. I know the names of these monsters, and I just forget, which is kind of weird.
At least I haven't played the game in a decade, so.
Yeah, so let's see.
Well, that's one of the things I like. They're using like the names of the monsters from the game. You know, I feel like Halo would have changed it somehow because they didn't like it.
Or they would have kept the name and given it to a different monster entirely.
Right, exactly. Something like that.
Okay, I'm just looking it up here now. I know, this is really entertaining for the listeners, because what's the monsters? We forget the names of the monsters.
Regardless, the point is that they mention them.
Death Claws. They were the best. I heard that they may not be in this season, but you guys have seen more episodes than me.
No, they haven't yet, but save some for
I heard
down the road.
I heard it may be for next season 2 is what I'm hearing. Yeah. But either way. So that was it for you, Barrett?
Yep, that was it for me.
Let's
great
go
episode.
Sean.
Well, not going to be saying much different because I've absolutely loved the episode I think every episode so far has been great. Great storytelling, great characters and acting, and an environment that is very much believable in what they're creating. And I mean, again, being a post-apocalyptic thing, we've gone through walking the gamut with Walking Dead and so on and so forth, right? And even Last of Us. Whereas those it just became it wasn't as fun to watch. This one still has lots of surprises, and it's still very exciting, and I don't hate all the characters. And they did, like, each of the people that were introduced to you, like the three main people that were following, it's just done so well and just rewards you for caring as opposed to just like doing other stuff that we've seen in other series that was not good.
Right. Well, and this is the one thing that's great about this show is similar to One Piece. If whether you know the source material or not, you're going to like it. So,
yep.
Because it follows the source material without destroying it. And
it doesn't give a middle finger to the fans of the actual games.
Right. So if you love the games, you're going to love the series. And if you don't know anything about the games, you're going to love the series. So it's good news. It's good stuff. All right. So that's our feelings on the episode. It seems like we all enjoyed it. So it's the show is 3 for 3 so far. And as Sean said, we've and Mike would most certainly agree, based off of our last TV episode series podcast, we've had some big lemons.
I don't think they're as big a lemon as you do. Like I said, I think there are a lot of people who really like Last of Us, but I think Last of Us delivered.
I was referring to Halo, but yes, Last
but
of
Halo
Us
is definitely
terrible.
Bad. But Last of Us deliberately took out anything fun. It's like we don't want anything fun in this, and took out all the fun stuff. I will actually say I think that, I hate to make the comparison because it's another Amazon show, but it does kind of remind me a bit of
Boys,
of The Boys, because that's another show that has things to say, is making points, is very satirical
and enjoyable.
And it doesn't insult the fans of the comic.
Doesn't insult the fans. And it itself, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's fun. And like this can be violent, can be over the top, can be a little raunchy, actually much more raunchy than this is. But I think that's a good thing.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so at this point, we can talk about everything, anything related to the episode. Again, this is a spoiler podcast. We can compare it to the first two episodes as well, because, you know, we've watched three episodes now, and they're all linked. They're not individual stories. So where do we want to begin? How do we want to start this? Who wants to talk first? What do you got?
Well, I'll just point out again that we have forward momentum in the storylines. The status quo at the end of the episode is different from what the status quo is at the start of the episode. We do not always get that in a lot of modern TV series that drag things out for no particular reason other than that they want to tell as few stories in a season as possible.
True. Anybody want to add to that or have another item that you wanted to bring up? I think, Sean, you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say that we could start with the stuff with Walton Goggins' character and how it's showing his pre all this wonderful apocalyptic fun that's come, and getting to see him in his role and getting an idea for the person he is prior to the cataclysm.
Yeah. As you mentioned earlier, Kevin, in your intro, you were talking about things about the beginning of Vol-Tec and the suits and stuff. So we do get flashbacks, and it's all surrounded by the ghoul, his story in the past. Because, again, since he's a ghoul, he actually got to live before the apocalypse, and because ghouls' life expectancy actually lasts for like elves. Damn, Siri. They're like elves in Dungeons & Dragons, where they live like 800 years or something because the radiation somehow extends their lives, but it rots their bodies. And so unless you were in cryo freeze, like in Fallout 4, your main character that you play in that, and you were frozen before the war started or as the war was starting, the only people that would know what life was before the apocalypse, because again, this is 213 or whatever years in the future, would be people like our ghoul here, because again, ghouls have an extended life. So that's an interesting aspect of the game. So if there's going to be flashbacks, real flashbacks, that are related to the three main characters, it's only going to be with him. So that's that was an interesting thing to see those flashbacks. So yeah, what do we want to talk about some of those flashbacks, Kevin or Sean? You guys were the two that brought it up.
Well, I like the fact that like when he's talking with about his character that he plays, the sheriff. And
because he's an actor, right? He's an actor.
Yeah, because he's an actor, yeah. And he's talking about not agreeing with killing the criminal. Because it's not what his sheriff would do. And then the director talking about the previous director being a communist and being replaced. And then that this guy was like, we want to go to a new direction, an individual direction. And basically, like, he's not happy with that. And just kind of seeing, like, how he's trying to exist. It feels like he's trying to exist in a system that isn't maybe for him per se.
Yeah, because he's based off of what I see, it feels like his character is more like a Lone Ranger, and now they're trying to change him into more of a anti-hero type, like a Batman. So it's okay to kill the villains, while his character before
it's okay to kill the villains. I would be saying it would be more like Punisher.
Well, okay. And it's interesting, the dichotomy between what he is now and what he was then, because in real life, he has become what he didn't want to be in his role.
So what is it that creates him to be that way, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, and, you could say that, the series is, that was a weird song. We could say that we're getting music here, Kevin, somebody.
That was my phone. My phone exploded. Sorry.
It's Sean. What do you expect from you Canadians? Anyway, but what it is they could be trying to say that they're saying something big because they are saying that this he's now become what he didn't want to be or whatever, which is fine. They may have been trying to do that, but again, we're talking about 200 and something years later, and there is
society,
and he's a ghoul. So
everybody's going to change in that situation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's still an interesting difference that I find. I'm sure is.
Yeah, because he doesn't have to be that vicious as he is, right? Because he is a bounty hunter. He is. Not really caring of people around him nowadays. So he has definitely changed for sure. Now, Kevin, you were going to say something?
Well, I mean, at first, the point I think was that he didn't want to kill the character in the TV show or movie. He didn't want to kill the guy because he was beaten. He was down. He was unarmed, and just shooting him was like, well, that's pretty much murder.
Yeah,
he did. I mean, it's one thing that if he's shooting, it's like if he's shooting, if the bad guy's shooting at him, the sheriff, and the sheriff's shooting back and, during the gunfight, the sheriff hits the guy in the head or the chest or what have you, and he dies, that's one thing. And, I'm sure the sheriff probably would feel bad about it, but it was one of those, hey, this was a gunfight. I was trying to get the bad guy. Now I've got the bad guy. Actually, as I'm talking about this, it reminds me a little bit of Star Wars, where Anakin Skywalker had Count Dooku. He cut Dooku's hands off. So Dooku really couldn't do much of anything, and the Emperor says, "Kill him." And Anakin says, "That's not our way." He's almost literally disarmed, but he kills him anyway. But here, I mean, it makes you wonder what happened between then and now, because he also became the poster boy, if you will, for the vaults. There you go, Phil, for the vaults, the company that does the vaults. And, you know, he does the characteristic thumbs up. He wears the uniform. He also says to the people, "This is a great thing you're doing. This is real. This is like a really good American thing you're doing." And it just makes me wonder what happened between the time that he was proud to advertise it, because later you see a billboard, like an old billboard with half of like the cartoon, you know, poster boy, and half with his face on it. So when did they switch from his face to like Fallout Boy or whatever the cartoon character is named? And, you know, and also we also meet his wife, you know, is a black woman. And it's interesting because, I mean, in that time in history, mixed relationships were not common or welcome. You know, they were not, they were seen, I wouldn't say taboo, but they were not particularly well received. So not only did he marry, you know, he married a black woman, he had a child from that. And so it makes you wonder what happened between then and the present today, where he uses a woman as bait. I mean, he's not torturing her. He's using her as bait to get that creature with the fingers in its mouth.
Yeah, I'll say there's certainly parallels here. And there's foreshadowing. There's stuff, like I said, I haven't made it through the entire season. And I haven't gotten to the end of that story arc set in the 1950s. But you can see where it's going, right? That this is the guy who was living on top of the world, literally, wealthy Hollywood celebrity, married with a child that he loves, in a great relationship. And all of that in a flash is taken away from him, and he's cursed to live for another 200 years now. Without them, I have no idea what happened to the wife and child. You know, if they survived the blast, if they died in the blast, or what happened. You know, we never really get the story as to how the ghouls became ghouls, and who became ghouls, and who didn't become ghouls. Maybe they'll answer that. I have no idea. But I do think I couldn't help going back to the very first episode. But I couldn't help but think back to Back to the Future 3, where Marty goes back in time to the Old West, and Doc Brown, who's living in the 1950s, gives him a cowboy outfit that looks like something that Roy Rogers would wear, right? It was this pink satin shimmery thing.
Yeah, with all those frills and all that around the like the tassel type thing.
Right, the tassels and he's playing the Rhinestone Cowboy, and then he switches up to become Clint Eastwood, right? After that. And this is basically what they're doing to his character in the movies, is they're basically taking him from Roy Rogers, from John Wayne, to the Clint Eastwood type.
I wouldn't say, John Wayne. I mean, John Wayne, he was a tough guy in a lot of those movies too. I mean,
he did
a lot of shooting first and asked questions later,
but they're definitely changing the type.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think this also parallels the story with Norm in the vault, right? Where the vault is this sort of sheltered world. A protected world where you can have this, well, you just don't kill people. That just isn't right. And Norm's like, fuck that. They came in, they murdered our people, they murdered our friends, they murdered our families.
They took my father.
And you're talking about teaching them. Yeah, they took my father. They took their jobs, and you're teaching them. You want to teach them intro to calculus. You want to teach them Shakespeare, and then if they're up to it, a little bit of Marlowe. So again, you're seeing that connection there. That when the world gets tough, ideals can fall by the wayside really easily. Now I do agree that that is absolutely true. That ideals are ideals, and then reality has a way of upsetting our ideals. Doesn't mean that you can't hold on to them. But certainly, in the case of the ghoul, he's completely disillusioned. Where I don't know that that's the case with Norm quite yet. It's just a matter of, in this case, those ideals are not going to hold. That this is just not a tenable situation and arguably foolhardy. He isn't quite as jaded.
Well, and I like shows that do that, where, you know, different characters are different levels of jaded, and some don't ever get jaded. Unlike, you know, like The Walking Dead, I always felt like everybody was so jaded and terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't like feeling that way, you know, because I think there are some good people out there that would not become bad just because of a bad situation.
Yeah, one of the problems with that show is that, especially Fear, which was just god awful. Characters would swing from being bitter and jaded and cynical to hopelessly naive and optimistic and idealistic at the swing of a hammer, just because this is what the story demanded. And it's like, well, we've done with the character like this. Let's make a dramatic turnaround, and let's make them around again, and then we'll turn them around again. And it's like, oh my god, just pick a character note and stick with it.
Yeah, and I think this show is doing a good job of.
And this is doing a plausible job. You can very easily see now, like Lucy right now is holding on to her ideas.
Yes.
Right.
How long that'll last? We don't know.
Exactly. We don't know how long that's going to last. Titus is in a weird position in that he's trying to, I think, hold on to his. Not Titus.
Maximus.
Yeah.
In that he's being shown that the ideals he believed in weren't real. And he's, on the one hand, kind of embracing that. On the other hand, he's kind of trying to live up to those ideals, too. He's trying to be a knight. And he's trying to think about what is it he's supposed to be. At the same time, he realized that the knights were kind of dicks. Certainly Titus was a dick. And he's kind of using that as permission for himself to be a dick.
But he's fighting being a dick too.
But he's so also like, fighting it. Right, he's caught between these two things, between his decency and between his, I think, a basic decency that he seems to have, and the ideals he was taught versus the dickish reality was Titus.
Well, his squire picked on him too, so that I think is part of the problem as well.
And then you throw the squire in there, and that's But even then, right, so he's not saying, well, I have to be better, I can't. No, he wants to give in to that. He wants to give in to his pettiness, right?
But I don't see him sending his squire in first. That's one of the things.
But he also doesn't
like
do it. So he's, but I could very easily see him, and I want to be perfectly clear, I can go either way. I'm perfectly happy living whichever way they decide to go with this character. I could very easily see them going either direction. I can see them deciding, let's have this character, you know, turn to be a dick. Right? Is he going to have that Anakin moment where, you know, he just slaughters all the sand people? Or is he going to have, or is somebody going to talk him down from the ledge and make him realize he's better than the thing he wanted to be? And that'll be interesting to see. And by the way, it's also the matter of the world that you're in. It's going to be really hard to be idealistic in the world that they live in.
Right. Not in the vault. Even in the vault, we see that same question with what has currently happened. The dumbasses want to keep these crazy people alive on the council. And the brother is like, we should kill them. What are you talking about? You guys are idiots.
I mean, a nice education is all right, but the thing is, it's like, I'll teach him Shakespeare, I'll teach him calculus. Well, that doesn't teach him morality. That doesn't teach him morals or ideals. You know, you could be evil and quote Shakespeare as you're doing it. I mean,
but they don't even look like they're capable of being able to do whatever these people want. They're in a prison room throwing their food around. I don't think there's a possibility of retraining these people.
Well, that's the thing. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, you don't want to retrain them because that's terrible. What you want to do is show them there's a different way. But continue, Kevin.
Well, I think retraining is terrible. Just the way I said it.
Retraining, reforming.
That's what, like putting them in a detention camp and
I'm not. That is not what I was saying at all. That might be what you're perceiving, but not what I'm saying.
You're thinking re-education.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No. You're thinking something like that the communists did and actually Chinese do. No, this is, I mean, what they're saying is, well, if we teach them Shakespeare, they'll be reformed. They'll be, they'll become better people just because they know Shakespeare and calculus and among other things. But the thing is that no, you have to somehow show them that their ideals are better than theirs, that, if you conform, to their way, they'll let you out. And they'll let you become part of the community. But the problem is that you look at the people at that meeting, except for the brother and the woman with the one eye who lost her husband. I have to admit, in the one end, I admire their ideal. I admire their, let's try to make things better for them and for us. Okay. The brother, however, because he feeds them, I mean, he knows who they are, but he feeds them and he sees what these people are. He sees what they're like. He sees that they're barely human. I mean, they may be human, but they're more animal than human. They act more animal than human. And he realizes that to do this, even if it takes 30 years, is another waste of time. And then they also discover that their water filter, whatever it is broken, so they only have enough water for a couple months. That's if the prisoners aren't there anymore. So in other words, the prisoners are also taking up very needed resources for survival. And are these people, are these vaults, workers, dwellers, are they going to use these ideals at the cost of their own life? Or, and the thing is that the brother knows, look, the brother realizes, like, these people, you can't reform them, or you can't teach them, or you can't, especially in 2 months, I mean, you just can't do it. And so that's what, and also, there's punishment that has to be done. It's not revenge, it's punishment. And it's for the safety of the rest of the vault, because what if something happens and they escape the vault, they escape that prison?
I'd like to know how many people they already killed.
What is going on American?
That would have a bigger effect on me as far as, like, if they just killed one person, maybe I could forgive. But, you're talking, they had to kill at least 10 people.
Obviously, you're well, at least killed, the NRSC.
They killed,
had that,
let's just
put it
backing, in percentage
but Jeff Gunter
it
has
pretty
said he's
obvious,
drop
they killed at least
millions
50%
on the
of the vault.
And have started to do so.
Yeah, that's what I
do
thought.
Do you worry that could affect
you're looking at about 50% of the population of that people.
What's your response to him calling you?
I mean, if it's 10, if it's 20,
saying that
the point
you,
is they killed
are in league with Mitch
people,
McConnell to oppose President Trump.
One of their goals is to survive,
right.
Not just thrive and do all right, but to survive. And these people are not going to let that happen. They don't want it to happen.
I'm kind of with you, Kevin. I admire the people who want to try to show them. The good in the world, and that they can be part of a community and civil and whatnot. But like the woman that lost her husband and an eye and the brother, you got to just kill all these people. So,
yeah.
It's interesting that we talk about this because
you have to be executed. You have to give them.
I just did a Bible study like tonight where someone asks a question, does God support or is okay with the death penalty? So, I mean, I just went through this. It was interesting just how it all kind of connects.
But this isn't in a civilized society where you can actually argue that. So that's a fair point you're bringing up, Kevin. Is the cost of keeping them alive greater than killing them?
That's the question.
Because they can't let them go. Because they let them go, they're going to go back to their evil cohorts and come back and invade the vault.
Yep. But it feels like our power people.
And you can't just keep them forever in jail because, like they said, they're wasting all the water and food on them, and they have limited supplies as it is. And these people want them dead. They don't want to be part of a society. And then the last thing is you can't, like I said, they don't want to be part of a society. Yet they're sociopaths. They're evil. They're scumbags.
Well, and how could you even trust that they're converted? They could pretend. I mean, there's so many dangers inherent in trying what they're talking about that it just doesn't seem even conducive to survival, which is what they're all, what they should be all about.
That's right.
What it feels like with these people in charge is either they're dangerously naive or they're dangerously arrogant. Either way, it's bad.
Well, to be honest, I call them assholes is what they are.
Well, no, they really are assholes. I don't know. Because
they're arrogant. They're fucking assholes. Excuse my language, but they are.
No, well, I mean, they are arrogant and they are naive. They are arrogant where they think, oh, we can. You know, reform these people.
I don't even think it's naive. I think it's arrogance because they know damn well these people can't be reformed. They're educated enough to know. They don't know.
You could be educated and still be an idiot.
They're educated enough to know that morals and ethics don't work with cluster B personalities.
No, they don't know that, Phil. They don't know that.
They haven't dealt with this type of thing in maybe their lifetime.
Yeah. All right. Maybe you're right, Mike. All right.
But once they saw what happened,
I'm looking at it as Star Trek, that they like they have all the stuff at their fingertips, even if they don't know. But you're right; they probably don't have everything like that because they could just use lie detector tests if they had that.
But there is common sense too. I mean, these people, what they did, there's no coming back from that, and there's no way that they can keep themselves safe from these people. So I still support what you're saying there, Phil. I mean, it's...
I see where you're coming from. I don't know. Because obviously what they're showing these people to be are the quote-unquote modern-day pacifist progressives. And that doesn't work in a world like this. And maybe they are naive. So, yeah, when I'm thinking about it, you're right, Mike, because these people have been locked away. They haven't had to experience anything like this before. So maybe they are naive. But when you have stuff like that happens, it can change your opinion quick. I know that's not always the case. I remember that kid, Dave Berg, or whatever his name was. I forget his name. Rest in peace, who was caught by ISIS, and they beheaded him. And his father, who's I think from Pennsylvania, didn't want Bush or Obama or Clinton or whoever the hell was president at the time to bomb and kill the terrorist because he was a pacifist, even though his son had the worst death ever. So there is people that will always be pacifists no matter what happens to them. But I think I would be more apt to be like the girl that had the fork stuck in her face. And they just kill them all.
It was Nick Berg.
Yeah, Nick Berg. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, rest in peace.
Or Daniel Pearl is another one.
But I don't know if she was a pacifist, but Berg's father most certainly was and said didn't want was upset when we sent in the people to wipe out the people that killed his son. But anyway,
the thing is here, they're not, at least in the case you're citing, they're aware of it, right? They understand it. And they're saying, I'm standing on the principle regardless. They're not even facing the issues. They're not having the discussion. They're talking about and excited about teaching them calculus. And they're excited about teaching them Shakespeare and Marlowe. It's like
they
it,
sure
they're
are.
Not, they are completely checked out. They're not having a what would be could be a very legitimate debate on the issue, which is of do we sacrifice these people for the betterment of the rest just because we don't want to have to deal with them. I mean, there was real issues. They have, there was an idealistic argument to keeping them alive. There's a very practical reason to get rid of them.
Yeah, and resources alone.
And the resources alone, the fact that they are there and they present a threat, and as long as they're there, they present a threat.
Never mind.
You're not talking about one by themselves. If you isolate them, you could divide and conquer. You might be able to civilize a few of them, but some of them are just going to be are most likely just going to be completely irredeemable regardless.
Yeah, they're modern-day criminals that are repeat criminals probably. And the difference is that these criminals murdered people they knew since the day they were born.
Right. And this is how they've been living their life. And there's certainly an argument to be made that with some people like this, they may not be reformable, that they may not be able to learn a better way, and that they are just so ingrained in this lifestyle, they'll never learn anything different, or at least teaching them something different is way beyond the capabilities that they have in Vault 33.
Right, and it's not coincidental that you have like mobsters that come together and do the same thing and have no conscience. It's kind of like that, and maybe you could get one mobster that would say, "Oh my God, I found God and whatever I'm doing." But like you said, Mike, with the limited resources they have in a society that is smaller than a small town, that's going to be impossible. And
head is in the sand. They don't understand what they're facing. They don't understand how monumental the task is in front of them.
And Mike, it is weird that they're excited to teach them calculus and Shakespeare when the same people they're excited to teach calculus and Shakespeare are the same people that just had
slaughtered them
and family and murdered. Yeah, exactly. That they've known since the day they were born.
Right, well, and not only that, they're related to more than likely because they need outside people to breed with.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they're all related.
I mean, I agree with Mike. I believe that they are very naive, and I think with the arrogance, they might
be dangerous themselves.
Well,
they are.
They're arrogant because I think. From hearing this, it's almost like they're happy because they have this opportunity to convert, or they have the opportunity to change these people into their own image. And I kind of wonder if it's like a sense of power. You know, we're better, so let's try to make them like us.
Well, and they're not even sure which of them is the leader at this point. That's the funny part.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, you have the two guys up front that they're speaking back and forth. You have the woman sitting down on the side, and I don't know if she's sitting there kind of like inside, like putting her head, doing the internal, face palm, or she's just kind of going along with it. But these two guys are, oh my God, these are like, this is like Ned Flanders 1 and Ned Flanders 2. You know, like I said, I have to expect them to say yes, indeed they do, because they're, gosh darn it, we can't get. And I'm thinking to myself, are you really that foolish? Do you really? I think that they have. Even though they experience what's out there, they still don't have a clue about what's out there. They've experienced it, but they don't have an idea of what it is actually like out there. And because we had, was it last week? Yeah, it was last week where Lucy was saying, well, we're trying to save America. And then the woman looks at her and says, really? You're not doing a good job. And because she lived by this ideal. She also tried to live by the ideal. And the golden rule to do unto others, that is a biblical ideal. of course, sleeping with your cousin is definitely not a biblical ideal, but beggars can't be choosers in this show, I guess. But the whole point is, you know, they have one set of ideals, but they're not, you can have these ideals, but you also have to live in this world. So you're going to have to figure out how to live with these ideals, but realize that maybe the ideals aren't what they should be. In other words, if there's somebody that does want to reform, great. If they don't, kill them. I mean, not because it's punishing them for not reforming, but punishing them because they murder people and you're a danger to our community. Because that's really what a lot of, you know, that's what execution is. It's not revenge. It's if you get out, you're going to do that again. We got to protect our own community. That's why we have life imprisonment. That's why we have the death sentence here.
Well, we have revenge because that's why we have victim impact statements.
But ideal, I mean, in my ideal, the death penalty is protecting the people and punishment.
Right. Well, and it comes down to three things. You, if you keep them alive, you lose half your supplies. If you let them go, you're dead. And if you try to convert them, you're dead. So
right.
That's it. Those are the only three options that are going to happen if you let them live. So, you know, it is what it is.
So anyway, we've yeah. beaten this one.
Yeah.
It's a topic, but yeah, that's fair, Mike. We should move on. Yep. All right. So, where do we want to go now? What do we want to talk about?
We were talking a little bit about Maximus, and when I was watching it, I was wondering, was Maximus trying to play the knight role? Like, all right, usually knights are jerks, so I'm going to act like a jerk. But in the end, he was actually decent towards his new squire. Because, I mean, at one point, they kind of did a fist bump at the end. You know, Titus would never have done that.
Well, the original thing was he didn't want a squire because he knew that if they gave him a new squire, then there's a chance that they would eventually find out that he's not.
The game would be up.
Yeah, exactly. So he was really Maximus and not Titus. So that was the first thing. The second thing is when the guy shows up, a couple of things happen. Like he opened up part of his suit to clean it because that's just his duty. And Maximus flipped out because he thought he was going to get caught. So he was being a,
he was refilling his water.
Yeah, that's it. So he's being a dink, but, I don't think he had any intention to be a jerk. It's just that he was more defensive because he was worried he was going to get caught. That's what I think.
I think he's playing the role. So, for example, the first thing he does is when he realizes he has the squire, he realizes his squire is his former bully. He's tempted to crush his head.
That is true. Yeah, that's
with his hand, and instead he decides, just grabs and pulls off his crotch piece and says, here, clean this.
Because that's what Titus did to him.
Because that is exactly what Titus did. So he is playing the role of Titus. He is trying to as best as he can. And, you know, and so he's acting. So, for example, when he said, oh, right, yeah, you're so clever. You let the ghoul go because they're radioactive and you could track them that way. And he's like, oh, yeah, of course, I know. I think that is exactly, I know that. He's making himself seem on, you know, which, by the way, very easy, cheap, old trope. But he's doing it not just because he's insecure that he didn't necessarily think of that or know that. He's trying to pretend to be somebody who he's not. And
right.
He should know this. And also Titus is an arrogant jerk. And Titus would have done the same thing. So there's all parts to that. And he's still, I still don't know, depending on where you get in as you go forward in the series. I'll be curious to see where he ends up going. Does he become a jerk? Does he double down? Does he have a moment where someone reaches out and taps into his better nature? Or is there someone who just manages to get him to go dark. Just as, by the way, the whatever they're called, the scavengers, are forcing Norm to go on the darker side and arguing for executing all prisoners. Whether you believe he's right or wrong is a whole other matter. He has lost his idealism, and he is definitely darker now than he was a week ago.
Now, which character are you talking about, Mike? The ghoul?
Norm is the brother. That's down in the vault.
Oh, yeah, the brother. Yeah, he's definitely changed, yeah. But one thing I want to bring up, Mike, about Maximus is I'm curious why he's playing the part of Titus instead of just bailing. Because the smart thing is if he doesn't want to remain a squire and then get stuck with another Titus, you figure he would have just bailed. And by taking the role of Titus and lying, that's crazy too. So,
well, I mean, think about this though. If you're out in an environment like that where anything and anybody can kill you, that armor is pretty good. I mean, you're going to want that armor. I don't think he wanted to be a knight. I mean, because he destroyed the communication. Because he was he was just ready to just move on with life, just with a suit of armor, you know, and maybe play the knight if it benefited him in, you know, in some town. But he wanted the armor.
Right, right. Yeah, so that's a good question, because in the game, Fallout 4, the squires and scribes, because I did research, and there's more scribes than squires in Fallout 4, but there are squires, too, and scribes are the lowest level. Usually they're all treated pretty well by the knights. The knights are pretty decent. When they're not decent, it's to outsiders of the Brotherhood, so what we're seeing here is a little different than what I'm familiar with in the game. But the thing is in the game, Fallout 4 anyway, the suits don't really have a radar to find them, in a sense. So if he left with the suit, at least in the game, they would never be able to find him, and they would just assume it's lost. So I don't know how it is here, if the suit has a like a Apple tag on it or something that they can just, you know, go beep beep and then they find them or not. But I would figure that I don't know. I guess it must, right? Because that's how they found him, even though he had broken the radio and he said he didn't want a new squire. So maybe the suit has a little beep on it, and he has to find out how to get rid of it so they can't trace him anymore. I don't know.
I wonder too if there's an aspect of him still wanting to prove his worth, because I mean the whole point is he wanted to be a knight, right? He's seen the darker side of it, or the side he wasn't aware of maybe before. But maybe there's still an aspect of him believing that there is good and that he can, well, I don't know, really find redemption for himself within the Brotherhood.
Well, you would think so, right? Because each knight is an individual, so he just got stuck with a crappy one, right, Titus?
Yeah.
You know, if he gets stuck with Joe would have been fine, you know, or Frank or whoever. But Titus was a dink. And so he had bad luck, you know.
Well, he doesn't know. And let's be honest. Let's look at his situation, right? His exposure to the Brotherhood has been narrow. Now, he was rescued by the Brotherhood when he was young. He gets an idealized version of the Brotherhood in his head. He's off in the camp. He's been bullied for a long time in the camp. Then we get the backstory, a little bit of that here. But right now, his exposure to his practical exposure to the Brotherhood after he's been saved is his other trainees are jerks. The one knight he's actually dealt with that we know of was a massive dink. Start coming to realize that the whole thing isn't worth saving, but I think there's still a part of him that would like to be a knight. I think there's a part of him that thinks if I can get the head and bring it back, all will be forgiven. They'll make me a knight. And I'll get to belong. I just don't think that that's ultimately what he really wants. I think that's what he thinks he wants.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a fair point.
The Knights as being something that, as a good thing that he wants to be accepted to, because he still is viewing it through the eyes of himself as a 10-year-old from when the bombs went off.
Well, and also, no one wants to start at the bottom, right? I mean, you know, when you walk into some place, you're kind of shocked when you find out that you're the dishwasher instead of the chef. So it's like, you know, so it's. I think he's just hoping he could skip that whole dishwasher part. And so I think it may be that he does want that, the knight role. It's just that he doesn't want to be shit on and a nobody either. But
well, and I think that goes back to this sort of theme of characters losing their naivete, right? That he's becoming a little bit more experienced about the way of the world. His eyes are opening up that the knights are not this thing that he's been idealized to. And by the way, that his bully isn't what he thought he was. That the reason his bully was to get the bullies to stop bullying him. Right. And even he says, I kind of wish he had lived long enough to find someone to bully himself. Now, that is a completely fucked up moral philosophy. But it was never anything personal. It was just a matter of, hey, you know, it's
like a wolf pack.
Right.
Yep. You know, he was hoping that the kid he was bullying wouldn't be the bottom of the wolf pack, basically, because he felt bad and he actually liked
them. It's just the way of things, right? Yeah, you don't feel bad. It's how things are. Things will get better for you just like they got better for me.
Yes, well, one thing I noticed is that I don't think he wanted to stay a knight because he knew what the mission was, and he was not going to do it until he wasn't even planning on doing it until he got his squire, and the squire said, "All right, well, here's our mission." And because the squire was there, he knew that if something happened with the squire, they would know, the knight, command would know, and they would send another one. He'd realize, okay, well, I got to do this mission now. Where he was probably just willing to just walk off into the sunset and survive with this thing and, I don't know, maybe settle down or something, or kind of rule the town or something, because you're the strong one, you know. It's my thought.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Maybe he was thinking of just being the roaming, Hulk from the 1970s something TV series where he went to adventure because he was in the suit, But once the squire came, the only way he could get out of doing the mission is to kill the squire, and he's not that type of person. So he was stuck to do the mission, which is to go looking for the head. So that's a fair point, Kevin. I think you're right. Because that makes sense, because it's like, why would he want to stay with the Brotherhood when eventually he knows he's going to be caught?
Right.
Unless
that's why he didn't want the squire.
Right.
Oh, he
right.
was still searching for the guy even after he had gotten the outfit.
Yeah, that's true too. So maybe Mike is right too, which is he thought if he brought the head back or the guy back, then he would be a hero and become a knight.
Yeah. Probably a little bit of both is true. You know, it's just he's
whichever
not sure
one
what
would
he,
make. Yeah.
Yeah, right. He's not sure what he wants to do at this point.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it was, he probably wanted to be a knight, but at least he had a fallback plan where he could escape and be protected because he had the suit of armor.
Well, and at that point, he also got to the point where he realized, maybe knights aren't cool like I thought, because this guy was such a dick to him.
Oh, that's possible too, yeah. But I'm assuming if he was brought in as a little boy, he knew that not all knights were dicks.
Well, how much was his exposure to the knights? Because he was mostly with people who bullied him, and he would clean up toilets. I mean, he maybe saw knights off in the distance or knights, here and there, but how much interaction did he actually have with one?
I don't know. That's a good question.
My My suspicion is that he hasn't had a lot of interaction with knights, that he was raised to look up to the knights and to train to eventually be a squire and then eventually, I'm guessing, become a knight, right? Because they talk about that, you know, that squires become knights by being brave and true and running off foolhardily at the advice of Titus. I think he's another character who's kind of naive in the ways of the world. I think you're seeing that with Walton Goggins. And why can I not think of the name of the character as his 1950s persona?
His real name, his real life name for right. Goggins. Oh, Cooper Howard.
Right. Cooper. I think we're seeing that with Cooper. I think we're seeing that with. You're seeing that you're going to see that problem. At some point with Lucy, you're seeing that in the vault. You're seeing that with this world, right? Is this case of people just having their ideals shattered, and he's going to get his shattered at some point if they aren't already.
I mean, I'm thinking about like when Lucy was talking about the golden rule, you can still do that. Well, you know, you can still do that in that climate, but you just have to realize, you know, part of that is going to be, you're still going to have to defend yourself.
Well, not everybody else is going to follow that golden rule in that world.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm just saying.
Not even in the real world for that matter.
Yeah, that,
I know,
exactly.
But I mean, the thing is, you can live by it.
Yes.
But I mean, it doesn't. But I mean, for example, like I try to live by it. But I mean, if somebody attacks me, I'm going to defend myself.
Right.
Right.
But she hasn't experienced that either. These guys attacking the vault are the first experience she's had of anything like this.
Right.
So she's still maintaining her golden rule, but she's starting to see that not everybody has that.
Well, but at least she explains it to him. And since he's lived before the apocalypse, even though she doesn't know the whole story about him, he knows what the golden rule is. So he's just become, quote unquote, bad, a bad guy at this point in his life. But she, at least, even if sounds naive, her point is absolutely valid, and he just refuses to care is the problem.
He absolutely does not care. I mean, even with the dog, she's like, well, what are you going to do with the dog? He says, well, he's not mine.
Right.
Because the dog stays behind. Right. The dog is loyal to the head. The head's in the lake. So since the head's in the lake, the dog's staying at the lake.
That's right.
And again, we've seen now in, you know, we've passed the potato already. To three different characters, right? Yep. Which is
three main characters,
right? Through the three main characters, right? So again, you're seeing progress. Think about the fact that Titus, we've seen go from bullied squire to squire, from bullied whatever trainee.
You mean Maximus?
Squire,
you mean Maximus?
Maximus from bullied trainee to squire. To faux knight in three episodes.
Yep.
Some shows that would be like he wouldn't get the armor until the final episode of the season.
Or wax on, wax off at the House of Many Faces.
Yeah, the House of Many Faces. It would take forever to get there and here we're rolling along. We're rolling along. Lucy's, you know, runs into the guy, befriends the guy, cuts the guy's head off, loses the head, is, you know, and acts as bait. And again, and is captured in three episodes, just moving along. And every episode is upsetting the status quo. Every episode, the characters are progressing. Every episode, the characters are moving. And we don't know to what goal. I mean, we know her ultimate goal is to get her dad back.
Yeah.
Now, I've already said I've seen up to episode 6. I don't know if she gets her dad back this season or not. So that might serve as a mild spoiler because I haven't seen him again.
Don't tell us. Me and Kevin don't want to know.
No, I'm saying as of right now, I don't know if she sees. I've been 2 episodes. I'll know whether or not she sees him again this season, whether or not he's alive, whether or not he's dead, you know, whether or not he comes back.
Well,
but as of right now, I don't know.
They showed in a clip that he's still alive. So
okay.
One of the things showing what's going to happen in the season or something, one of those little clips.
But yeah, we'll see, you know, we'll see where they go. We'll see. Does Titus become a knight? Does he reject the knights? Does he become, inspire the knights to become something better? Does it maybe find out that not all the knights are jerks and that Titus was just like the jerk knight and nobody liked him? All of which are possibilities. And what happens to the ghoul? You know, how did he end up where he is now? Why is he acting the way he's acting? I mean,
why is he not following the golden rule when he would have before the nuclear explosion?
When he would have before, when he's become the thing that he said he does, he rejected becoming. He's become in reality the thing he did not want to become in fiction.
Right.
And you know, so does Lucy, or perhaps Maximus, or perhaps the dog, tap back into that humanity of his. Or not. What happens down in the vault? Because I didn't realize we were going back into the vault. I thought once Lucy had left the vault, Lucy, I thought, was one of our point of view characters. I mean, she is, obviously. But I thought she was our point of view character for the vault. And when she left the vault, we were out of the vault. I didn't think we were going to be going back to the vault this season.
I didn't either. I was kind of surprised.
Except maybe at the very end. And what are we getting? We're getting politics in the vault, and I think that's really kind of cool.
Yeah, we're getting the brother's story too, it seems.
Yeah, and we might be getting the brother's story, we might be getting the cousin's story, and the story of the Betty and Wally Walter, something like that.
Yeah. What about the woman with the one eye too? What's her name?
I don't know what her name is. I was
when you said the cousin, I thought you meant everybody in the vault.
No, the cousin is the cousin that she was boffing. Right?
We know
because they've said, right, you can't fuck with your cousin, you don't want to breed with your cousin. So that's why they've been trading with the vaults, right, is to keep the gene population kind of stirred up.
Yep.
And that was the whole point of her getting married in that first episode. And I'm talking about the cousin who was on guard duty and or door duty, you know, the Hodor, right? Hodor. His job is to hold the door. And now he's lost his door duty and we don't know what job he's going to get. But he's like an amiable goofus, and he seems just as much of a doofus as the rest of us, of the vault people. And it's Nick, who was the sort of the Weasley brother, who had no desire to leave the vault and parade around on adventures because he'd got half a brain in his head. But he's the one that I'm surprised has turned into the new point of view character down there. Right. But we're also we're also going to see some stuff happening. I think, you know, because you got Eye Patch, right. As I think seeing that there's an ally.
Yeah.
Because she, I do wonder, like, would she be willing to forgive if she hadn't lost her eye?
And husband.
And cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. To be honest, Mike, probably she would be different. Because when a lot, you know how people are, they'll promote and support a certain cause until that cause affects them, and then suddenly they
until it causes an inconvenience. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So once you support the homeless, but then when your wife gets raped and murdered by the homeless person, you suddenly don't want the homeless in the area anymore. So things change based off of what happens to you personally.
Well, classic NIMBYism, right? It's same basic idea. You support it until it affects you.
Right, right.
A liberal is just a conservative that hasn't had a relative shot yet, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's the old, is that a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged, and a liberal is a conservative who lost his job, right? So that's the old joke. And again, it goes, cuts both ways.
So, let's see, where do we want to go to now? So we talked a little bit about the vault and the politics, but yeah, I agree. The brother has an ally in the woman who has one eye and lost her husband, for sure. So I think where we may see in further episodes that they're going to be a rally cry to change the opinion of the, I guess.
Oh, I think he's just going to kill him. I don't think he's going to rally anybody.
Well, what I mean is, I think they're going to try to change the people in the vault to be more in the thought mode of themselves. In other words, the brother with his new ally are probably going to try to convince the rest that you can't be these pacifist progressives, idealists anymore. You have to be realists. But again, I haven't seen the rest of the show like you, Barry. You may have seen more episodes.
No, I'm on the same episode as you.
Oh, wonderful. High five.
But I just think that his immediate goal is going to be to kill them. I don't think he thinks that those people are going to change either. They couldn't even look at him like he was, you know, normal. Like, I can't believe you're thinking about killing these people.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, you're right. They may be as dangerous, like I said earlier, they may be as dangerous as the people that came in to try to kill them.
Absolutely.
I go back to the dangerous naive or dangerous arrogance. Either way, it's bad.
Yeah. You going to say something, Mike?
I've seen ahead, so I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah,
I will say that from my perspective at the time, I was kind of with you, Phil, and thinking that what he's probably going to do is start to try to persuade others to come on board and see things his way, and then maybe take matters into his own hands. That's what I was thinking he would do. I'm not going to say whether he does that or not. I'm not going to say how things go for as far as I've seen up to this point, but.
Because I was wondering if he was going to poison. I was wondering if he was.
That is exactly what I was thinking, since he's in control of the food.
Oh, yeah, that's a terrible way to do it, but, you know.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you don't really use any supplies because every bullet counts, so.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
they don't even have bullets. They have tranquilizers.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's true.
They don't even have bullets. And the thing is, he knows that, like, okay, if he kills all of them, you know, and they're able to actually prove it, then he knows he's not going to be executed because they won't execute him. And, I mean, they'll punish him, but, I mean, he's like, okay, what are you going to do? Because, I mean, because the cousin comes out like a little broken up, like, you know, and then he just says, you know, well, they just demoted me. I won't be doing the door anymore, but okay, that's all right. And he was all right with it. The brother steps in and he just did not care. And they said, okay, we have.
I love that scene.
Yeah, because, I mean, they even said, you know, lacks enthusiasm. He says, well, I didn't know they said that, but yeah, they're right. You were washing dishes, but you lacked enthusiasm. I'm sort of thinking, would you have enthusiasm if you had to wash dishes? I sure wouldn't.
I would say that this was a Twilight Zone episode, which it's not. But if it was, I would say it would be something like, well, fuck it. I'll kill him. I'm not going to get the death penalty. They'll just try to be, you know, Titus Andromedon, right? And then it will be fine. And then he murdered them, and they'll say, well, we finally learned our lesson. We're going to have to put you to death. Yeah, And that would be the ironic twist. But I don't know. We'll see where it ends up going. Because I think at some point he's got to.
Take out the progressive fools.
No, at this point, this is a this is a disconnected story, right? It is not tying into the arc with Lucy, the head, the ghoul, and Maximus. At some point, it's got to connect, and it can't connect if he's dead, right?
Yeah, I really think he's our point of view character down there now.
He's our point of view character down there. He's showing, and at some point, he could do something, get himself exiled, and then ends up back with her. In that way, she can come back. Maybe he does do something, gets caught, and she comes back just in time to try to save him, or the father, you know, as the overseer. Is able to save him. Maybe something happens that way, but at some point these storylines have to converge. So I don't think he's going to get executed. Whatever else happens remains to be seen.
Oh, so who are you implying that you don't think is going to be executed?
The brother.
The brother.
So you think they're going to arrest him in the vault?
No, I didn't say that, Phil.
I said
this was a Twilight Zone episode kind of thing. I could see him doing a thing and knowing that he's going to get away with it because they don't believe in the death penalty. And then because of what he does, he finally wins everybody over to supporting the death penalty and getting executed. But I don't think that's going to happen because this has to go back around to connect to the main story.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha. I just misunderstood what you're saying. I didn't mean to sound rude when I asked. Where it sounded like you thought I was putting words in your mouth. When I wasn't intending that. I think actually that's a fair point about the brother's story. This is going to be a more interesting story as well. And maybe will be a fourth story in the series to go along with the three leads. But I don't know, because if you look at it, it's weird because if you look at the wiki page, and again, wiki, take it for what it is. We know it's a biased source and not necessarily factual in a lot of cases, and it leaves out a lot of stuff. But at least I'll talk about it for here because this is what I'm using. The main cast doesn't have the brother listed as a main character. So this is who they have as the main characters, at least in the main cast, quote-unquote main cast. The character of Lucy, the character of Maximus, and the character of Lucy's father, Hank, so Kyle MacLaren. Okay, so they do have Norm. I made a mistake. So Norm is in the main cast. So it looks like he's going to be a main character, actually. So they may go with his story. Then they have a character, Dane, who is Maximus's closest friend as a main character, which is kind of odd because I guess maybe they're going to bring back Dane. And then, of course, Cooper / the ghoul. And that's it. That's the main cast. That's it. Everybody else is recurring or guest. You know, guest would be Michael Emery, Michael Rappaport, things of that nature. And then recurring are people like Lee Moldaver, who's the leader of the evil what the hell do you call that?
The Raiders.
Raiders, thank you. This is the weirdest thing. I've played the game hundreds of times and I forget all the characters, all the things. Yeah, so the Raiders. Betty, part of the governing council. Thaddeus, who's the new squire. You know, and then Woody, who's again one of the vault governing council people, and stuff. So we do have all those characters in the vault as recurring, besides Norm, who is part of the main cast. And I wish I knew who the character was that had the one eye, but I assume she's listed in the recurring cast. So the gatekeeper cousin, he's in the recurring cast. Cooper's daughter, Cooper's wife. Let's see, Lucy's cousin, Chet. Reg, who was in the governing council. And then Vault 33 resident named Davey, whoever that is. And yeah, I don't know who.
I think Davey is the one that was going to teach them Shakespeare.
Oh, I think you're right. So let me see. A character with one eye lost husband name, Fallout TV. Let's see if I can find that. Steph, maybe? Steph. Let me see if I've got... All right, so let's see where Steph is listed in this cast. Steph. Okay, Steph is recurring as well, yeah. So, yeah, so... Yes, yeah, so she's... I think that's a pregnant... It says it's a pregnant resident of Vault 33 and Lucy's closest friend. Is that the girl that got her eye poked out?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, so she's in the recurring cast too. So I didn't know she was pregnant.
Yeah. They went over that pretty heavily in the very first episode.
That's right. Yeah, she's just not showing much at all, really, right?
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of the women were pregnant.
Yeah. So, okay, so she's in the recurring, so they're going to all be important parts. But yeah, based off of Norm being in, seeming like he's having a bigger role and they're focusing on the inside the vault story, it looks like he's going to be important. One interesting thing about the recurring role, though, is they didn't list any of the prisoners. So it looks like none of them are going to be important. And like Mike said, maybe they're going to.
Well, they're probably going to die.
Yeah, they're all going to.
I think they're all going to die.
Right now, the prisoners aren't people, they're plot devices.
But they could have used one prisoner as a plot device that was actually a name that was either going to join them or pretend to be and be a villain, you know, one of those type of things. But it looks like that's not the case because none of them are even listed as recurring. But continue, Mike, what you're saying.
Yeah, so I just think I don't think we're going to get any of them because I think they're just there to create strife amongst the Vaulters.
Right. All right. What else did we want to talk about? Anything else?
I think that's about it for me.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about the monster much.
Yeah, they're oh my god, I'm forgetting the name of the type of monster again, and I just mentioned it and how it came from.
Gulper.
The Gulper.
Gulper, thank you. Yeah. Those things are friggin' hard to kill in the game too. It was bad.
They're just crazy looking and just nasty.
Yeah. In the game, they're really nasty, the bastards. But yeah, it was pretty cool. You could tell that, you know, it was CGI, but it was still really well done. Because it's a frog, it didn't do a quint and chop the people in half when it bit them. So,
well, it's definitely, I funny you said that, because I did get
the quint.
A sort of a Jaws vibe, just because he's like slowly cranking the chain, which always has me think of that scene of Quint slowly turning the reel on that. And then,
then the other characters inside half like Quint was.
Half in, half out as it jumps up. And really, all it is a giant mud puppy, right? So, a giant larval salamander, because it still has the gills. But the thing that makes it neat to me is the fingers. That just makes it creepy.
Oh my god, it's so cute. Yeah.
That it has human fingers in its mouth. Just like I don't even know how that mutation could possibly exist, but
it's definitely creepy.
I thought it was funny that CX-404 was the only one who actually stopped it for a bit, where it was getting stabbed at by the ghoul, but it was when CX-404 bit his hand. that it jumped back into the water.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But yeah. Really, other than that, and you know, it's an awesome creature.
Now I get why they didn't have the Myolurk, and it was they used the Gulper instead, because the Myolurks are specific to the ocean and the New England coast because of the horseshoe crab. But the Gulper makes sense. And also the Gulpers were used in the West Virginia one too, Fallout 76. So they've since, like you said, Mike, they're basically amphibians, they can pretty much be anywhere as long as there's water. That was a cool monster, Barrett. And the fingers, I never saw that in the game, but then again, you never get that close. I mean, you get close,
you hope not to, right?
yeah, no kidding, right? But you do get close, but you don't really look inside the mouth or anything. So, yeah, that could have been invented with the game, with the show.
That one shocked me.
Yeah, it's a pretty good creepy moment. All right, anything else anybody want to bring up?
That was it for me.
That's all I got.
Sounds good. Before we get into wrapping up and stuff like that, so last week it was spring break for my kiddos for school, my 8-year-old and 10-year-old daughter. So we did a 3-day trip and a quote-unquote stay vacation. I mean, because we're like 30 miles from Boston, but we got a hotel in Boston and we just stayed there for 3 days. And speaking of Fallout 4, which takes place in Boston and Eastern Massachusetts, we did stuff that were in the game, and I kept on pointing it out throughout
Good way to go to prison.
What do you mean? Well, I pointed out when we did all the stuff, and then we had a tour, and the tour guide actually brought it up, and I knew the answer, and he goes, "You're the first person that ever knew that," which was kind of cool. So basically what we did was and if you played Fallout 4, Boston, a lot of Boston stuff is in it. So we saw Bunker Hill, and we climbed that, and we did Faneuil Hall and the Grasshopper Adventure, which is the Grasshopper Weather Vane. That's one of the adventures in Fallout 4, and sure enough, I pointed that out to my kids. The State House, the old State House, where the Boston Massacre occurred. The North Church, where there's a huge thing that happens in the game. Old Ironsides, or USS Constitution, which is the other name for Old Ironsides, same thing. The Granary Burial Grounds, where John Hancock, Sam Adams, Paul Revere, Mother Goose are all buried. That's a huge thing, and the ghouls, the insane ghouls come out, and you have to kill them all. Fenway Park, of course, because that's like the big city is Fenway Park, because it's protected, and they use the walls of the park as the protection. The Freedom Trail itself, which you follow, which leads you to an adventure. The Boston Public Gardens and the Common, the Boston Common, where there's one of the coolest monsters in the game. And, of course, the North End itself, and that whole area where they even have an adventure of Pickman's model from the Lovecraft story, which takes place in the North End and is an adventure in the game for that as well. We took the tour with the guide. He dressed up as a Minuteman, and he brought us through the part of the Freedom Trail. And one of the things when we came to the Boston Common, not the Boston Common, the old State House where the Boston Massacre occurred, he said, "Yeah, here there was a video game. There's three video games that have a adventure here." And I immediately said, "Oh, Fallout, Assassin's Creed, and Last of Us." And he goes, "You're the first person that ever knew that." I go, "Thank you. Thank you very much." My daughters were like amazed. They thought it was the greatest not the best dad ever. But either way, it was pretty cool. And to actually see, I mean, I've seen them all before, but it was pretty cool to actually experience it and talk about it with my kids as we're going, especially my 8-year-old who loves scary stuff. And so I was talking about the ghouls and all that. So anyway, that was my little kind of sort of Fallout adventure that I had last week, where we got to see the actual items in the game, Fallout 4 in person. Anyway, that's all for that. Now, I guess we can get into, let's see, we're about 1:40 in, so I guess we can start wrapping it up, give our final thoughts and stuff. But before we do, Barry, what's that podcast that me and you do, and we have a number of other guest hosts join us, and we're probably going to do the new Emily Blunt film on it.
Yeah, Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. Yeah, we're going to probably do The Fall Guy that comes out this coming Friday. Look for that in the coming weeks. We do just about everything on that podcast. Interview directors, writers, actors, actresses, everything. We review movies, genre films.
Books.
Books, yep.
Short stories we've done a couple times.
Yeah. Yep. And we'll probably do more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because we're thinking, we were talking to you, Kevin, last year. We're thinking of doing another one or two Lovecraft stories or something, so maybe we'll do that. Maybe do a, even was thinking of some other short story authors from the bygone eras as well.
It's interesting because Conan Doyle, the guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes, is known for writing a couple of horror stories. I haven't read them yet, but
yeah, could be. Especially short stories, because novels we've done before, but novels that take, it's obviously a much longer time to read through them and then finally do the episode. Short stories, even though they're longer short stories, they're almost like mini novels. You can get through them in one night, and they could be some good episodes that we could consider doing, like Arthur Macon's and Lovecraft and Poe and like you said, Doyle, and so forth. So possible stuff. And of course, we're going to do what's that show with the Taylor Swift sexy butt, Mike? What's that show? We're going to be doing that one soon.
Peacemaker. We've been doing that soon for about a year now.
Yeah. We get stuck doing
soon,
other...
soon,
and it's promised. Yes, once this podcast is over, maybe we'll start set up the date for that. Besides that, Mike, what's that other podcast that me, you, and Eric do on the side?
Cinema a la carte. That's just where we review something that is not necessarily horror related and is not necessarily something recent. Or topical. It's mostly just the three of us taking turns picking a movie that we would like to talk about that we would probably not get a chance to talk about on Dark Discussions. And so we reviewed comedies and animated films and some thrillers and action films, like John Reacher. We did an animated film in Inside Out. We did I'm picking all Eric films. So we did a drama in Starlet and a thriller in History of Violence. We did a disaster film in Poseidon Adventure. And we did science fiction in Forbidden Planet. So there's all sorts of things. We just did Risky Business, I think, with the last one we did. And we have a sports film coming up, which is a Phil choice. So it just sort of, if you want to hear the same middle-aged white guys talking about a different set of movies, that's where you can go, is to Cinema a la carte.
Fair enough. And I'll add, though, Mike, I'm 70% Iberian, so I could be considered Latino. Even though, I guess, Latinos are white anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Do you speak Latino?
I took that some Spanish in school, but that's about it. I can talk to my cleaning lady at work, and she appreciates it. She's pretty cool, actually. But either way, that's about it. All right, sounds good. And Kevin, you mentioned it earlier. What's that One Piece podcast called that we just wrapped up a couple months ago?
Boa Hancock and the One Piece. It's about the live action TV show on Netflix, One Piece, not the anime that's been around for good grief 20 years now. So yes, they are, yeah, that's 21 maybe, but yeah, they're doing a live action show based on the anime, but yeah, they've only done one season. They're working on season two, and I am anxious to see that one. So yes, Boa Hancock and the One Piece, even though Boa Hancock probably will not be in season two. Too bad, Phil.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of strange. And you know, it's funny, you know, you said 20, 21 years, but if you add the manga, which is the source material, the original source material, the comic book, we're talking 1997 when that came out. So a long, long time ago. So One Piece has been a franchise for years. Years. God, 97. Imagine that. That's crazy. So
it's funny because my wife was in Japan, like, couple months ago, and she barely saw anything relative to One Piece. We see it more here than we do there.
How about that? Yeah, that's interesting. And let's see, we got Sean, what's that podcast that me, you, Mike, and Barrett just wrapped up?
It was a fun podcast for a show that was not as fun, which was Cortana's Communiques, based on the first two seasons of Halo on Paramount Plus.
Indeed. And Mike, what's the main podcast we do on the network? What's that all about?
Dark Discussions podcast. That's been around since 2011. Long enough for us to have reviewed a film and had it remade. So, we are your source for horror film fiction, and all that is fantastic. We've been through a cycle of a number of hosts. Phil was there from the beginning. Eric and I joined shortly thereafter. And then, you know, we've had some different hosts come and go and go and come. And right now it's you and I and Barrett and Eric and an occasional guest host popping in now and then. But yeah, so that's the Dark Discussions podcast. Our last film was The First Omen. The movie before that was also The First Omen. It went by the title of Immaculate. And our next film is going to be one on Shudder called Late Night with the Devil. So if you want to hear what we're talking about on whether it's theatrical horror or indie horror, you never know where we're going to go because it all depends on what we have time to see.
And I saw that film today, as a matter of fact. And speaking of sometimes special guests, hosts, I think we may have one. Actually, I'm 100% sure we may have one. And why don't you introduce yourself? Speak.
Speak, woof. I will be joining the Dark. I will be sometimes Kevin for this upcoming episode. So I just saw it. I saw it Saturday. I kind of divided it up like Saturday and Sunday, and I really liked it. There's just nostalgia. The movie is really well made. The acting is fantastic. It's a good movie, so hopefully we will make sure to communicate that when we do the episode.
All right, sounds good. All right, so that's pretty much the house cleaning for the network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. And the main feed for all the podcasts that your co-hosts are on and all the podcasts that were just mentioned can be found on their own feeds. So whatever the name of the podcast was that we said, but they're all appear on the Dark Discussions podcast feed as well. All right, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts on this episode here, the third and final episode that I think Jonathan Nolan will be directing, or actually have his hands on at all. After that, it's his Minions. So the name of it was The Head, and let's go and talk about our final thoughts. So let's start with you, Mike.
Yeah, I really like the episode. It's, again, kind of moving the story forward. We're playing around a lot with the characters. We're seeing a lot of internal conflict, I think, on most of the characters. Maybe not so much on Lucy, who is currently the guiding star of the show's morality. We'll see how long that lasts.
We got a little bit more behind the scenes of the history with Cooper's Hollywood history. And I know there's more of that to come. But yeah, I'm really interested to talk about what comes next.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with you, Sean Fox.
Another great episode out of the first three great episodes we've watched. Again, can't speak highly enough about the cast, story, environment it's set in, just tone, everything is so good. And I can't wait to have you guys catch up to the end of it.
All right, sounds good. Mr. Letts.
Good show. I'm looking forward to seeing episode 4. And just seeing the characters and the plot progresses.
Sounds good. And for me, I liked this episode a real lot. It quelled any worries I had. And yeah, looking forward to the next episode. And oddly, I'm enjoying not binging it, to be honest. It's been kind of fun going along each episode blind for the podcast. Let's go with you, Barrett.
Yeah, love the episode. Looking forward to the next episode.
All right, sounds good. So next week's episode that we're going to discuss, at least it's next week for the podcast, because, again, they were all dropped on April 10th, the whole season. And that was called – well, that one's called The Ghouls, directed by someone named Daniel Gray Longino, or Longino, and written by someone named Karen Fitzgerald. So yeah, we'll be talking about that next week. We're hoping to we're all but assured to be recording that on Monday, May 6th. And
I won't be back.
I made a mistake. I meant to say Tuesday, May 7th, and dropping it for May 9th. Yeah, don't ask me why I said the 6th. Sean. With all that stated, Kevin, why don't you lead us up?
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for sitting with us and listening to us talk about episode 3 of Fallout, The Head. And I hope that you'll be able to join us for next week's episode.
I know that I've lived a relatively comfortable life.
Stop! Mercy!
You need to go home. Vault dwellers are an endangered species. I do not think you would be willing to do what it takes to survive up here. If you insist on staying, then you will have to adapt.
So they say will be a lovely day. A bright new sun will suddenly break through. But I don't want to see tomorrow unless I see it with you.
I grabbed a moldy one.
Tomorrow.